At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Check it out now. Tuesday afternoon, March 5th, 2024. It is the Beating the Book podcast. Indian Wells, baby. Tennis's de facto fifth major, the PNB Paribas Open. Skill Alexander. We are doing this on this afternoon because we were, first of all, there's a couple reasons. One, the draw only came out 24 hours ago for a tournament that begins tomorrow morning, Wednesday. And the other reason that we had to delay it just a few more hours is that this gentleman had to get his skiing in. It's the great Drew Dinsick, Whale underscore Capper, co-host of not only the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with his buddy Andy Molitor, but of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast as well. Which he does with Jay Croucher, correct? I want to get his name in there. I never get his name.
Yes, Jay, okay. Of course. Yeah, I've got to connect you with Jay. He's an advantage player.
He's Australian and knows American sports so well, right?
Yeah, well, his background is funny because he was a lawyer in Australia and found a passion for sports betting, got hired by PointsBet there, and then they gave him like liberty to kind of hire a team to bring over to the U.S. to run the points betting trading room. And then he was like, you know what, I can actually do better if I'm just playing, if I'm just betting.
That's right.
So I'm going to go ahead and walk away from this. And then the next thing you know, NBC scooped him up to be the on-air talent. And so he gets the best of both worlds, gets to do a little content and a little bit of betting.
Well, good for you for doing both, and thank you for, we're going to put a visual up of this, I hope, at some point, but Drew is literally outside. Where are you? You're at Aspen, you said?
Yes, where the beer flows like wine. it is a wild place, man. A lot of fun so far, and yes, we hit the absolute jackpot ski karma. It's dumped for a good 48 hours. It was like whiteout conditions for 48 hours on the front end of our arrival. Our plane got in on time, and it's just been fresh powder every which way you can find it. So this week is going to be pretty special.
How often do you just sit back and say to yourself, self, I got a pretty good life?
I do my best.
Yeah, no, good for you. You live it well. You absolutely live it well. All right, so here's the thing, and I say that with equal parts envy, but also like with appreciation. My God, it's awesome. Here's the thing. So this tournament, first of all, let me just say this: I went to this last year. It's for a guy who loves being in his car and driving. It's a difficult drive from Vegas. Because you really are through the desert to the point where at some point you say to yourself, if something happens to me out here, we're all toast. So I wanted to go this year. Didn't work out. But it is an amazing tournament to go to. It is hard courts, but it's the slowest of hard courts. I don't know if you saw this. You were skiing today, but like there seems to be a tennis ball controversy that has sprung up. See that? Andy Roddick was tweeting about it. So we have outrights, we have first-round matches. We don't have the schedule exactly of first-round matches, but we'll do what we can here. Let's talk about it from a macro perspective. Let's start on the women's side, ladies first, where Iga Swiatek, Drew, the number one player in the world, depending on where you're shopping, plus 275 at DraftKings. She's right around that pocket. She won this 2 years ago. Elena Rybakina won it last year. She is the, let me not lie, she is the number three shot here at 6-1 with Arena Sabalenka in between at plus 350. Coco Gauff the de facto number four player in the world at plus 650. Not de facto, she actually is. And then honestly, the drop-off, as we talked about last time before the Australian Open, is really stark. Where do you start with that? Is that pretty much the headline? It's those four and then a drop-off?
I would even say those three and then a drop-off. I'm not really considering Coco Gauff live here. We haven't seen her play especially well at all. In the year 2024, Gil, it's been a rough go of it for Miss Gauff. And, you know, I mean, she did this last year. She was not the same player at all at the end of the season as she was at the beginning. I don't expect ultimately that we're going to look at her run through the U.S. hardcore swing to a U.S. Open title. I don't expect we're going to look at that and be like, wow, that was a fluky one off. I think she'll kind of, you know, have a nice long career and be competitive and be, you know, U.S. women's number one for a long time. But the way she's playing so far in 2024 does not inspire you the kind of confidence that she can get through this difficult of a field. The women's kind of middle class is better than it's ever been. Like, not good enough to, like, you know, really, really say that they're going to take down, you know, all three of the big three here, but, you know, good enough that Coco getting to a semifinals would be a huge victory for her and her team. And at that point, she would probably be plus 350 to Sabalenka. So, you know, I have to put her on a second at the top of tier two in this tournament. And, you know, our friend J-Rod sent me the draw within 5 seconds of it hitting
Bro,
the internet.
Shout out to
very, very fast.
Shout out to J-Rod because he is.
No faster fingers on the internet.
There really isn't. Yeah. J-Rod really does. It just has informs us perfectly on this stuff. So thank you to J-Rod.
Yeah, I thought he was playing a prank on me, though. It's like the same draw. It's like the same draw as the Australian Open, like almost identical on the women's side. It's so bizarre. Iga has got the same nonsense head to head against a bunch of really, really high ceiling players.
Collins and Ostapenko.
She's going to have to play Rybakina in the semis and then presumably Sabalenka in the finals. Like, this is nasty. Yeah. And I think the price reflects that. Like, do you remember Iga ultimately closed at Australia? Was it like plus 225 ish?
Yeah, it was shorter than this. Shorter than this, yes. So plus
shorter
low
than
two,
this,
yeah,
right?
Low twos,
right?
Yeah.
And like, this is an easier thing to win because you don't have to win seven matches. You get a bye, so you get a Danielle freaking Collins after Collins has had to kind of play a hard match, presumably. So that helps you a little bit in the early onset here. But, you know, these conditions are substantially more favorable to Iga's game generally. You know, there's a longstanding joke of this being kind of, well, I shouldn't even say a joke. Like, if you take a giant step back and you want to talk about what Indian Wells is to, I think, a lot of players, this is sort of the official, like, start of the season, right? The Australian Open swing feels very premature for a lot of players. They're just not really ready for it. And then you have some weird indoor matches in Europe. You have the clay swing in South America, the golden swing in South America. The women go to do this weird tough back-to-back in the Middle East. It's just a little, the tour is a little, kind of not bifurcated, but just a little bit spread out. Like, you know, people aren't, it's a little bit preseason-y.
Yes.
Indian Wells is sort of, in my mind at least, sort of the start of the regular season for most everyone on tour, and it's a kind of a proving ground for anyone who thinks that they're going to do well over the balance of the middle part of the season, because it kind of neutralizes those players who are especially good at just hard court versus those who are especially good at clay court. Like, everybody's kind of got a chance here. You go from Indian Wells to Miami and then right into clay before grass and then come back to the U.S. hard. I think this is, you kind of learn a lot about these players at this tournament, I feel like. I don't typically have many takeaways from the first 2 months and change of the season. But this year feels a little different because they did push the women's tournament, you know, up where they had the 2000s back to back in, Doha and Dubai were back to back. And Doha was fascinating because you got to see the best of the best against each other. And you got to see a final between Iga and Rybakina that I think was like hugely consequential in a positive way for Iga, because Rybakina had sort of been the boogeyman, and you know, she gets her after a slow start to that match.
Yeah. By the way, a year ago, Rybakina beat Iga in the semis here, 6-2, 6-2. Just to clarify that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was sort of the boogeyman moment, actually.
Yeah.
Because I think, did Rybakina also take her out at, was it, it was the Australian Open. She popped her at the Australian Open on the way to her final, losing the final to Sabalenka, I think.
Australian 2023.
Somebody else might have gotten her there. But basically, Rybakina was a little bit of the Iga killer. And Iga getting her in Doha final was pretty impressive and pretty important, I think. And then Iga probably should have backed it up with another 1,000 in Dubai, but kind of weirdly ran out of gas.
Yeah, Rybakina did beat Iga in the fourth round of the Australian Open last year, 6-4, right. 6-4. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, you know, the fact that that kind of head-to-head is a little bit less tilted, I think, is huge for, you know, expecting to get a competitive semifinal match between those two women. And I don't think there's really anyone else in the top half of the draw that you're really kind of very especially concerned of making a run here deep into this tournament.
I
think the top half is tough.
Top half is tough. So I'm going to beat you to the punch on my next question because I think you're going there. But with Q1, just to let people know, here are some of the names. This is not an order of play, but these are sort of names on the top. So it's Q1 is Swiatek, Mira Andreeva, Katie Bolter, who just came off winning a tournament, freaking Collins, Ostapenko, Maddie Keys, talking about like best performance could be troubling if she's playing her A game. Q2 is Rybakina. And the likes of Pavlyuchenkova, Kalinskaya, who's had a good first part of this season, Paolini as well, Kostya Kadadmaya. Bottom half, start with Sabalenka. Do you, because you said big three and everybody else right here. How do you feel about Sabalenka, who, as we've all said already this year, took time off to get veneers and didn't really seem to care about tennis that much? Do you really consider her a threat here? Because we don't really know what we're getting with her, do we?
I remember after she won the Australian Open last year, thinking like, man, that was such a career-defining moment for her, that she was going to have a nice long exhale, and it was going to be a while before we saw her play competitive tennis. And I think we might have even talked about it. We were like, man, like she'll be kind of at home in Miami. Like that's a better course speed for her. It's similar to Australia. Like that's maybe where you see her kind of, you know, recapture some of the top form you saw from her in Australia. But she showed up at Indian Wells last year and was freaking awesome.
Yeah.
She ultimately didn't win, but
got to the finals.
She was very, very good.
Yeah.
Rybakina was just treeing. She was playing absolutely top level. The best, probably her peak, I would say, as a player, if you're going to go with like just an ELOS type of ranking, I think Rybakina at Indian Wells was probably the best she's ever been. I think Sabalenka was very, very good there. And the fact that she wins the Australian Open again and just completely mails in the next month is interesting. Like she's got it cuts both ways though, right? Like she's got no tread, no wear on the tread, right? There's, you know, completely fresh.
True.
She played one match in Dubai and she was awful in that match. Like just not interested in being there, showed up for the paycheck kind of stuff. Oh. And kind of in that moment, is she gonna sign up for like one of these 250s, you know, like something small and just kind of get some reps, you know, and just get a win under her belt before Indian Wells? Or is she just gonna go to Indian Wells like completely cold turkey and just try to find form there?
And the answer was the latter. Yes.
The answer was the latter.
Yeah.
So this is somewhat speculative, but her plan seems to be, I'm going to play myself into shape at Indian Wells. And if she had gotten Iga's draw, like if you flip flop those two players in the draw, like Sabalenka is not making it to week two.
She really is.
It's just too many. There's too many good players in her way that she would get pounced. But where she ended up in Q4 in particular, being really relatively soft, I think does actually serve her fairly well to, you know, get a couple of matches under her belt and find some, you know, find some form. And at that point, the fact that she's less battle worn maybe matters. I think I hold her current rating so high above everyone else in the bottom half of the draw right now at peak that I don't think it's really worth swinging hard against her.
Here's who she's got in her corner. She's in Q4. She's got Jessie Pegula, who is not at the top of her game right now.
Although, just broke up with her coach, by the way.
Just broke up with her coach, and her coach went to who now? I forgot. He just signed.
That's hot news. But that was a relationship that bore all of the fruit of Pegula becoming a top four player.
Yeah.
So that was a weird bad sign, I thought.
Sabalenka, Pegula, Svitolina, Emma Navarro. Obviously, for those who haven't followed tennis recently, that she is a top American player at this point in the top group. And then Leila Fernandez also in there. So, yeah, you're right. You're generally speaking not the, just like in Australia, not the hardest draw at all. What I am perhaps most interested in asking you, you probably know where I'm going with this. We go to Q3. That is the Coco quarter. Zhang Xinwen is in there. Vika Azarenka is in there. Elise Mertens in there is. And the one that I wanted to ask you about, Naomi Osaka is in there. Where do you stand on the four-time Grand Slam singles champion who is obviously making her way back now?
Man, this is so tough. Like, at her peak of her powers, she's as good as the top three players. Particularly on hard court. She's a funny character because literally, like, if you expect her to do anything on clay or grass, like, don't, like, just put an entire line through a huge portion of the season, right? And so there's a little bit of a premium on her to do something here and at Miami to get points, to make, you know, make up for the fact that she's going to be getting these tougher draws and have to, you know, having harder paths. If she wants to do anything in the U.S. hardcourt swing in the fall, she wants to compete at the U.S. Open in a way that, you know, she has a meaningful chance to win. She needs to get to quarterfinals at a minimum here, and then back that up and go maybe even a step further in Miami. And then at that point, I think we can say the comeback is officially on. Yeah. Right now, we haven't seen enough to say that. And it's a bummer because, like, there's been flashes.
There has been. Like, that's why I asked.
If you're not watching the whole match, you're just watching the YouTube highlights package, you're like, whoo, man.
There she is.
That's the Osaka I remember.
Yeah.
There she is. But it's not, you know, the consistency is not there. The fitness level is not there. And so if she's getting herself into three set matches earlier in this tournament, she's not going to go not going to be around for very long. And that's kind of what the story of her tournament, you know, her 2024 so far. I will tell you this, though, the fact that you get a day in between. So again, for our friends who want to see Iga live, for our friends who want to see Rybakina live, we do know that they're going to be on Friday, Sunday,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The key is Friday, Sunday, which means you have a day between matches, which I think really is important for a player like Osaka who's trying to get her legs under her. And so, yeah, if she wins Q3, am I going to be surprised? No. That said, have we seen enough from her this season to say that she's fair bet at price? I would also say no.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, so here's the question. And again, because of the nature of when the draw came out and sportsbooks slow to sort of roll these out, even DraftKings does not have quarters up. I'll say yet. I'm assuming they will have them. What price would you require, hypothetically, to bet on someone like Osaka to win her quarter, which is, as you said, is Coco's quarter, and you already said you're down on Coco.
Yeah, well, and for that reason, like, you know, as you look through the draw, if you have a specific player that you think is overrated by market, you gravitate to that quarter, and they're the top of the quarter. That is Coco, that is Q3. And yeah, Osaka is the likely second choice there for me. I would price her in the 20% ballpark. So if you're going to get me anything in the 5-1 range or better, then I'll take it. But I don't think that's what you're going to see.
Yeah, she's got Samsonova in the second round if she's able to beat a quali in the first.
Yeah, Samsonova is a... you can't trust her whatsoever.
as we've documented many times before.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the time I was in the airplane in the U.S. Open when she had a billion match points. Oh, God.
Tomo Janovic in the U.S.
Open. Tomo Janovic. That's right.
Her 50-1 on her in that one. I was feeling pretty good because after Tomo Janovic, she got Serena. And it was like, hey, this is it. You got it. Q4 is yours.
All right. So then, Drew, the outrights. Wait a minute. We have quarters that have just come down. No, we don't. It's just the quarter to win the quarter. So in other words, the winning quarter.
Some of the exotic markets. Now.
That's right. Okay. We don't have the one we want though yet.
I see.
Let me just make sure.
I see.
Half. We do have bottom and top half winners. So here's the outright. The outright is Iga to win it plus 275. This is at DraftKings. Arena, Sabalenka plus 350. Rybakina 6-1. Coco plus 650. After that, it drops all the way down to Jessie Pegula at 25-1. Yelena Ostapenko at 28-1. And Zheng Xin Wen 30-1. And Dreva then at 40-1. Everybody else 50-1 or longer. If we do halves, which is the only thing that has populated thus far, half winners, Sabalenka's plus 175 for the bottom. Coco's plus 3. You think that's a good price is what I'm getting out of that. Wow.
Yeah. That's a very bettable price.
Coco's plus 350, and then it drops all the way down to both Zheng Xin Wen and Jessie Pegula at 14-1. The Navarros and the Svitolinas and the Kasatkinas and the Osakas and the Sakkaris and the Samsonovas, all six of those players at 22-1.
Wow.
So there's your answer to that. Jeez. Oh, by the way, and Leila Fernandez 22-1.
Okay, so maybe you are going to get a bettable price on a soccer Q3.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. So
based on those half prices, you will.
Top half, Iga's plus 160, Rybakina is 3-1, Ostapenko 16-1, and then Vondrousova 18-1, the defending Wimbledon champion. So Sabalenka half plus 175 is what's got you?
Oh, yeah.
Got you excited?
I would actually almost. My favorite bet would probably be Sabalenka runner-up, like specifically, specifically winning the second half and then losing the final. I feel like this is pretty likely, but I mean, you know, she rewarded bettors so effectively at the Australian Open that the market is going to be very kind to her in the head-to-heads, and I think like I'm a little hesitant to get crazy on the top half, you know, just in general because. Like really the margins between Iga and Rybakina are very, very close right now. They're very close. And the price on Rybakina is so much better, but she's the better player. You're going to get an interesting market there. If that is your top half semifinal.
Corroborate what you said numerically. If you do hardcore numbers, 12 months, 6 months, 3 months, Iga's 112, 0.6, 112.9, 109.0. I'm combining serve and return serve data.
Yeah.
And Rybakina is 107, 109, 110. So depending on what parameter you use, it's neck and neck.
It's very, very close. I guess some of our smart friends are very in on Rybakina to win this at price. And I get it. Like, if you can get 6-1 on her and she might be the best player of the field, then... Like, and she's the defending champion. Like, she obviously likes the conditions. Like, a lot of reasons to really take that sincerely. But I will say that the Doha final I thought was instructive for two reasons. Number one, Iga being able to fight back from adversity was something we haven't seen a lot.
She got punched in the mouth.
That mattered.
That's right.
She got punched in the mouth and she fought back. Yep. And even more than that, the characteristic that really stood out about Doha, it was windy. It was nasty, right? It was windy. And if you know anything about Indian Wells and really just in general the desert during the transitional season of March, it is windy. Like there are very, very, if there's anything that happens to kind of be an X factor in that match, if it's a windy match, then like Iga now knows what to do in a match against Rybakina in the wind when last year she did not. And so I think like ultimately Iga probably just wins that and then probably beats Sabalenka in the final. And plus 275 may be ultimately a pretty favorable price considering the conditions are a little on the slow side.
Refresh my memory.
Ball be damned.
Refresh my memory in the Rybakina Iga match in Doha, which Iga won to win that tournament. The adjustment that Iga made was not trying to murder for winners, like she just kept it in play. Was that the adjustment?
I would have said more like she just softened her tolerance.
Yes.
For going for low percentage shots.
Better stated, right? Correct.
She, in the first four games of that one, up until weirdly Rybakina, like, did she hit herself in the shin and was bleeding? Like I forget exactly what happened, but she ultimately self-inflicted wound, drew blood, and then you have to have a medical stoppage to deal with a blood issue. And so in that gap, Iga talked to her coach and her coach was like, basically just chill out.
Yeah.
like stop going for the corners. Like it's too difficult with these conditions to hit those shots. Like just, go for 90% of the corner instead of the corner. And that was like all the difference in the world. She stopped hitting on forced errors. It set her up for more opportunities for winners. And it really frustrated Rybakina pretty sincerely. Cause Rybakina was like, she was on cruise control up until the MTO.
I was on a plane for most of that match. That's why I don't have a recall. Okay, let me just ask you one non-betting question, but just from a tennis viewing standpoint. So we've obviously watched Iga specifically, but also all these players so many times now. And I said to somebody the other day, I go, it's almost to the point now where, and it's unfair because, as you just mentioned, Rybakina is right up to her, cozied right up to her in terms of raw data. Sabalenka, obviously up in that tier as well. So to say that, any match that Iga enters that doesn't end in a victory is disappointment is completely unfair.
Sure.
Even though she's the world number one and she's won four slams already and there are more to come, I'm sure. But, like, have you done any thinking about her mental state on some of these? Like, when she loses... Yep. Okay, so when she wins, it's often so dominant, you're like, well, there it is. She just destroyed the field. She, forget losing a set, she barely lost a game in this tournament, that kind of thing. When she does lose, and let's just take the Australian Open, which was Noskova, it's often, and then in Dubai, remember she was up on Kalinskaya a set, was first set she was up 4-2, or was she up a set 4-2? I can't remember. But... as soon as she was up a break, it was the first six games, 4-2, and then she just stopped playing, and she's like, I just got tired. I'm mentally exhausted. Do you ever, like, think of her, like, that's the sort of bugaboo with her that it's, you cannot handicap some of the stuff in her that's swirling around in her head sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, she puts a lot of pressure on herself.
She sure does.
And that's not always a good thing when it's a womano sport. Like, you're out there by yourself a lot.
Yeah.
And if you are compounding the problem by putting pressure on yourself with your opponent also putting pressure on you, that can be bad. One of the things that makes Rybakina a little spooky, I mean, we jokingly call her Robot Kina sometimes because she has a very robotic affect. She does not put pressure on herself, although she's got something weird going on with her coach, but we'll leave that for
her. Interesting. When she won Wimbledon to win her first and only slam thus far, famously nonplussed, like nothing had
unconscious,
happened.
Unconscious. Yeah. And that's kind of the, that's sort of the moniker. That's the, to not to compare her to Djokovic, but like that's kind of what made Djokovic sort of special throughout, you know, so much of his kind of dominant run was just like, oh, I'm down a set, whatever. Oh, I'm down two sets. Okay, fine. I guess I should start trying now. Yeah. You know, like, you know, that kind of mentality can serve you well. And Iga definitely has not gotten to that point in her kind of growth, and maybe she never will, because it might just be human nature that she just has such a kind of compete. She has a competitor's mentality to me, like, as opposed to like hey, like this will work. She's not laissez-faire in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
She's very much like, this is like every shot, every point, every game is in my control. It's my destiny. Like, and if it's out of control, then that's a problem, right? And I think you know, the fact that, you know, you said, I think a kind of interesting point, which was, any time she doesn't win a match feels a little bit like a disappointment. Well, I mean, it's going to be an upset for the most part, unless it's against one of the big, you know, the other big three, other two of the big three. And I would say any tournament that she doesn't win is a disappointment on clay, surely. Like, she is still clearly the class of the world on clay. And if she doesn't win a clay tournament, then you would have some eyebrows raised. But on hard court, it's still a relatively level playing field between Sabalenka, Rybakina, and Iga right now, I think. And, you know, the kind of the story of the offseason was Iga really spent a lot of her time with her team, with her coaches, like specifically coming up with tactical approaches for dealing with the Rybakinas of the world, dealing with the Ostapenkos of the world, dealing with the women who can hit just a heavy, heavy ball.
And thank you to J Rod again for keeping me informed at every turn of that.
Sure. Yes. Uh-huh. Surely. Yeah. But yeah, like it was specifically to impact her ability to come, you know, kind of level the playing field with Rybakina, who she may have to play in the semifinals, with Ostapenko, who she may have to play in the quarterfinals. And I think ultimately that should be, you know, should be able to matter in some way, shape, or form here, because again, it's slower conditions here, which means movement matters a little bit more, shot making matters a little bit more. There's less of a you know, kind of serve and bang bang winner, you know, type of firepower can get you across the finish line here. So you know, her return skills and her return game should be kind of the. Should be the X factor, really, to get her this title, I would guess. And I think ultimately, the thing you worry about is the match against Noskova or the match against Kalinskaya, where she's like, you know, an 80% to 90% player to win that match. In that match, like clearly the better player, but something happens in the match that takes her out of it, or, you know, kind of just puts her on tilt because all of a sudden it's not in her control anymore. And, you know, that may just take reps or, you know, who knows what else, you know, rather than tactics, maybe you just need like a, you know, mind state type coach or something like that. But I don't think that sort of the shocker potential is completely, you know, off the table. Like, she could get checked.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, not that Kalinskaya nor Noskova are bad players. They're both very good players. But sure. Iga should be able to beat both of them. Yeah, it was 4-2, by the way, first set against Kalinskaya. By the way, I love that you're on the ski slope and I'm in a casino and your audio is so much better than mine with the noise here. All right, so let me just clarify. So you like Sabalenka half, plus 175. You like that number. Did you end up with any outrights? Did you actually bet an outright then here?
No, I haven't. You have not. And honestly, like, my guess is that Rybakina is going to look so clinical in the early going here with her soft draw that you're going to get a chance. If you want to bet Iga, I think you're going to do better than even what is a favorable price, in my opinion. Like my price says, my fair says bet Iga out right here.
My fair would be about
plus 215. So I think anything in the 275 range is plus EV to bet Iga. But I also expect that with Sabalenka having an easy draw and Rybakina having a relatively easy quarter, I think you're going to have opportunity for avoiding the shocker early with Iga and just betting her in those two matches as a small favorite back-to-back and do better than plus 275 that you can get right now. So
now with first
that's
round.
That's my general feel.
That's a good call. Now, of course, I still bet Iga, but, you know, that's me. shocker.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
So we don't have, again, the exact schedule of first-round matches, but they did post all the prices on I don't think it's even all the first-round matches. It's probably not. Or maybe it is, but we don't know what's tomorrow morning or Thursday. I don't know if you've had a chance to scan these.
Yeah.
Both on the men's and women's. We'll get to the men's here momentarily. There is I haven't dived deep into these yet. But just on a glance, there ain't a whole lot for me. I'll tell you one of them, and you can just let the hate wash over me for what I'm about to say. But, yeah, you know who should not be anywhere close to plus 235 in their match is Katie Volinets against Mira Andreeva. She just shouldn't be that big of a dog.
Yeah, I completely lost track of Mira after what was an undressing of Ons and then just a hang on by the skin of her teeth against Danielle Perry, and then a loss in the Australian Open. She hasn't shown us much of a step forward since then, which is a little bit kind of, what's her team up to? What are they doing? I don't really understand exactly what the plan is. So I don't disagree with you there. I will tell you I haven't looked at the match by match because I'm waiting on the order of play in particular.
Me too. Because I don't want to do extra work.
There are some venues, some tournaments. Miami, good example, where I don't really care. Like OOP, who's on what court? It doesn't really matter. Like Indian Wells, it matters, right? The courts are different, very different.
And so different.
Night versus day might as well be two different venues.
Yeah.
Like it is usually dry and sometimes windy during the day. And then nighttime, it can play it can play so much slower. So you can, if you have I tend to look for players who are better in slower conditions, who are playing in the night matches against, and they're being priced like it's the day match, right? Like that sort of stuff tends to really make a difference in match by match betting at Indian Wells in particular.
What was interesting is that I went last year again, they didn't have Iga playing at night ever. She was in the daytime every round that I was there for.
I think her team must have requested that because the finals are always during the day.
Yes.
Semifinals and finals are always during the day. And so you can kind of get into a little bit of a, I've seen it for sure. Just condition shock where most of your matches you're playing at night and then all of a sudden you're in the day conditions and you're like, where am I? Like, this is a different court. This is a different, different animal entirely.
Have you gone to this tournament before, Drew?
No, I haven't.
Because I remember
I've been to Indian Wells like 10 times in my life and never during the actual tournament.
Oh, yeah.
I can't explain it.
I remember when I told you I went last year, your response, I don't know if you remember this, your response was, that's not a tournament you go to, which I thought was such a great response. And I was like, well, I kind of get that, but man, this is such a great time of year because it's right before March Madness. So you don't have, for those of us who are just completely immersed in March Madness, there's not that priority. It's, do I go to Indian Wells? Do I go to spring training? It's such an amazing moment in the sports betting calendar. So that's the only one.
I'm always shtuck here because it's like ski season. This is like kind of the quintessential time to go. After President's Day is over, everybody who's got kids and families, they're like, well, ski season's over. So the slopes are empty. Everything's cheaper. Conditions are incredible. So we always try to do our ski trip at the beginning of March, which makes it tough to get to Indian Wells. And then, then March Madness, so I always try to get out to Vegas. So it always does complicate things, but, this would have been the freaking year to go. And I have not entirely written off going, the Sunday of the middle week, because this is probably going to be Nadal's last run. I've never seen him play live.
That's the big lure. That's because I saw Carlitos last year, but this is Djokovic and Nadal. My God.
Yeah, right.
By the way, just to be thorough on this, Paula Badosa just pulled out of the tournament.
Ah, yikes.
So, this is how premature we are, because everywhere I go, she's got a match with Ashlyn Kruger. That's not going to happen. Krejcikova's out. And that's not to mention players who have injuries. Like Ann Jabeur, the reason we don't mention her, she's all banged up, you know. Her numbers haven't been good.
Mentally and physically.
Mentally too. That's
anyone,
right.
I guess here's a fun question for you. Anyone on the women's side besides Karolina Pliskova, who has really surprised you so far in 2024?
Who has surprised me? See, because I'm so numbers focused, Kalinskaya doesn't surprise me. That's a great question. Let me run through names here. Katie Bolter's numbers are good, so that doesn't necessarily shock me.
But them being good does kind of, right?
Yes, them being good does. That's correct. No. Okay, that's a better way to answer the question. Whose numbers surprise me? Kalinskaya did surprise me when I saw her, when I've been following her numbers.
Sure.
Bolters do. Paolini has surprised me, right? Those would be my three answers. I'll tell you to the negative who surprises me. Carolyn Garcia has fallen off the map for one.
Yes, yeah.
As has a lot of names on the women's side, right? Jabeur because of injury, Vondrousova, Kasatkina.
Kudermetova.
Alexander. Sakkari's one of these players that, her numbers are completely off. Yet when she gets into a tournament like this, she manages to win early, typically.
Mm-hmm.
The Raducanus of the world don't necessarily surprise me that their numbers are what they are. Peyton Stearns falling into the toilet kind of surprises me. So there's more surprise to the bottom than there is to the top, really, if that answers your question.
Yeah, that's fair.
Were you thinking of someone specifically?
No, I was just curious. Because, there's usually one or two players who play well-ish in the early going, but they don't, like the Paolini and Kalinskaya, market's not going to be.
Right.
They're not getting caught with their pants down a second time. That was your Dubai final, right? There's probably no meat on the bone there. But there are usually a couple of women who at least are more competitive than you would have guessed in some kind of middling of a tournament match, and they can pop at Indian Wells. And I haven't really put my finger on who that is just yet. But this is an interesting time.
Yeah, we didn't say much about Xinwen Zhang. What do you give her, puncher's chance here?
Not really.
Not really.
I don't like these conditions for her. And honestly, since the run to the Australian Open final, and particularly the way that final played out, it felt like it impacted her confidence a little bit. She's not playing like the same confident player that almost took out Iga at Roland Garros a couple years ago. It's not quite the same.
At that moment, when she took a set from Iga, it was like, oh, here's the next great player coming. Hasn't panned out. All right, men's side. No surprise here at the top. Everybody's playing. The Osaka of this side is obviously Nadal, for lack of a better analogy. This is his final year on tour, I guess. We'll just use that as a sort of parameter. He said that, for all indications are that this is whatever run this is, it's the final run. He got to the finals in this. Remember the epic Taylor Fritz. Oh, Fritz is going to hurt because he's hurt and it's not even going to be played it's actually Nadal who's hurt and Taylor Fritz ends up beating him. By the way, Taylor Fritz is a name I want to bring up too, because I'm curious about what you think. But let's start with Nadal. What can you rightfully expect from him here?
A championship.
You can.
I think you can expect that. Yeah. I mean, he's good enough at his best to win. I don't know that he is. If this was a type of tournament where when you get on clay, if you drop them into Monte Carlo right now,
Oh, he'd win.
And he had to play, and he had to play every day on Clark.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's probably not going to win. Right. But that, but the day off in between, I think does help him a little bit, get his feet under him. And kind of the mental, you know, the, like the tricky thing about what's going on with Djokovic right now, and in particular, the fact that Alcaraz and Sinner have beaten him now, it's a problem for Djokovic, right? Like he doesn't have the, the big brother, little brother thing on the next gen anymore. But Nadal still does have a little bit of that mystique, I guess. I mean, I know Alcaraz beat him in clay. It's still when he was, you know, even after losing to Fritz in that Indian Wells final, like he took Fritz to a mental torture chamber at Wimbledon that I don't know that Fritz has ever recovered from. Like that was like, you know, there's still a mystique about Nadal that
for sure.
I think gives him enough of an X factor that you can't dismiss him from winning a title here. That said, if he plays one match and, oh, my ab hurts and I'm scratching, you also shouldn't be surprised.
They showed the replay. I had forgotten about this. So before that Fritz match, I guess the second round of 2 years ago, he played Sebastian Korda. And I had forgotten Sebastian Korda was up 2 breaks, 5-2 in the third set against him. And Rafa did Rafa things and beat him.
Yeah. He's got the mental edge over basically everyone on tour.
Yeah.
Just because of the mystique. Even Djokovic, for that matter. I mean, Djokovic obviously isn't afraid of him, but that's not a particularly flattering head-to-head for Djokovic. I think ultimately, like, is he going to win? I think I would put my over-under at Nadal titles in 2024 right now. I would put it at, 2.5.
I was gonna say
I think he's
going
to, he's going to get a couple. I think he'll get two. He might get three. And I think he has a better chance at at these events where you have a day in between. I think he has a better chance at these events where this court speed is a little slower, obviously clay. And I think, the fact that he is, seems to be in form, at least from what I saw in his exhibition against Alcaraz. I don't think there's a huge, he needs court time to get tuned up, really. And so I think ultimately, I think he's going to be a factor at this tournament. I think he'll be a factor at a couple of clay tournaments in the run up to Roland Garros. I think he'll be a factor at Roland Garros. So, I think there is definitely a hero's exit potential for Nadal in 2024. I don't think this is I'm just going to show up at all these tournaments and get my farewell, cheer from the crowd and not compete.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Nadal gets Milos Raonic in the first round, by the way, and I sort of laughed or smiled amazing. Because the line was Nadal -172, -169, somewhere in that pocket, and I just sort of smiled because I'm like, how would they have any idea what to even make this? Here's the outrights: Novak Djokovic +175. These are DraftKings. The Australian Open champion Jannik Sinner at 3-1. By the way, shout out to Drew, from the last tennis podcast we did, because you nailed Sinner there.
Never getting those prices again.
Nope, never again. Carlitos +350. Daniil, why are they going to Indian Wells so early? Medvedev, when he saw that Nadal and Djokovic were on the same plane early to Indian Wells. Daniil Medvedev 7-1. And then it drops down to Sasha Zverev and Alex de Minaur, both at 25-1. Rafa is 35-1. Fritz and Rublev at 40-1. By quarter, and again, these are not in any order of play, but just the names in each quarter. Quarter number one, Djokovic's quarter has Humbert, who's had a great early start to 2024.
Incredible year, yeah.
Casper Ruud, Tommy Paul, Hubert Hurkacz. I have to include your buddy Scam Nori just to make this an official podcast.
Past champion. Past Indian Wells champion. Most fraudulent, the most fraudulent Indian Wells champion of all time.
What's the dude's name that he beat?
Look at all of the players he beat in that run.
Yeah.
It was mind-bogglingly weak, his path to that victory. Holy smokes.
That was the year Badosa won, I want to say, also.
Oh, yeah. Might have been, yeah. They had it in September, I think, right? Everybody was all out of sorts because of the pandemic.
Oh, that's right. It was the October 2021.
Yeah, right.
That's right. He beat Basilashvili. That's right.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
Nicholas Basilashvili.
Was that his last match he ever played on tour?
I don't think I've ever seen him come up in a tournament since then. That's so true.
Oh, my God. Some round one. He probably has some round one defeats at the slam level just to get the paychecks.
So Q1, Djokovic, Humbert, Ruud, Paul, Hurkacz, Nori. Q2 is the Medvedev, Nadal. Q2 is actually Medvedev, Nadal.
Damn, that's going to be good.
Yeah, Medvedev, Nadal, Dimitrov. Wow. Fritz, Korda, Rune. Holger,
really,
Vitas,
really
Nadskov, Rune. You know, you asked the question, like, what surprises you? Taylor Fritz's numbers surprised me. Like, I didn't believe they were still that high. But they're good. Q3, Sinner, Rublev. I got to include my boy Jakub Mensik, who made me a ton of money so far this year.
Cool.
Yuri Lehechka, Ben Shelton, Stefanos Tsitsipas. And shout out to Emil Roussevori in that quarter as well. Got to include him. And then Carlitos is Q4 with Sasha Zverev, Jordan Thompson, who won a tournament a few weeks back, Jack Draper, Alex de Minaur, Karin Khachanov, and Ogier Aliassime. Let me see if we have halves or quarters.
Hearing it all out loud, the state of men's tennis is really, really strong right
now. It really is. There was a lot of good names in there, wasn't there?
Yeah. For sure. The Jordan Thompson Los Cabos title, Los Cabos double title. He won doubles and singles. It was his first ever tour level title. Unbelievable.
I had Mickelson in that match against Jordan Thompson. Oh, I want to say it was the quarters.
Yuck.
6-0, 6-0, 3-0, 6-love, 3-love, then 6-love, 4-1, then 6-love, 5-3. And I lost.
Yuck.
Still left.
Yuck.
A mark. Left a mark. Yeah.
Yuck.
Sorry.
No idea how Thompson won that. But it was fun to bet against Thompson in Acapulco round one because he was still sweating the tequila from the victory celebration of his first ever tour win in Los Cabos. Alcaraz Q4 is a wrap. Like, I don't see there being much competition for him in that quarter. I think he's pretty cleanly through to the semifinals. I think Sinner probably comes through pretty cleanly in Q3, although there's some tougher names in there.
Yep. Q2 is the one.
It's worth noting, like, Sinner hasn't lost yet this year. Like, he's the current, title belt holder or whatever. He backed up his Australian Open win with the Rotterdam title. We haven't really even seen him be tested that aggressively. So he's playing some super confident tennis right now, and he's a factor. Like, don't overlook him.
He's doing the Nadal thing from 2 years ago. Remember, Nadal was like 18 or 19-0 before he lost to Fritz. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he lost. Yeah, Fritz was his first loss of the season. Right?
That's right.
Yeah. And also some parallels because Nadal came back against Medvedev at the Australian Open final that year, down 0-2. He beat Medvedev. Very, very similar parallels to Sinner and his coming back from 0-2 against Medvedev in the Australian Open finals. Ah, good times, man. Ah, goddamn. You gotta rewatch that.
Amazing.
That was great.
Can we just say that out loud, real big? Can I say something dorky and corny? If you don't like, and I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you get it. But like, for those who can't appreciate this sport, for like the combo of physical and mental fortitude, it's just fucking amazing. Like, sometimes you watch this shit and you're like, first of all, a stupid comparison because I'm talking about me, but like the knowledge that you would crumble like just a house of cards in any of these situations, the fact that these guys just power through it, it's incredible.
It's incredible.
Yeah, they're playing. Medvedev played more tennis in that tournament than any human has ever played in a tournament in history. Like he was effectively running a marathon every other day with how far he was running and how much time he spent on court at every step of the way. Like that was absurd. Which brings us to Q2, I guess, as we're going up. I think bottom looks chalky to me. I think Q1 and Q2 are where you're going to see some interesting stuff, just because you have so much talent up there. My general feeling about Medvedev is like he was being a gigantic baby at Indian Wells.
Remember
last
that
year?
He hated the court. So this is not hard court. You call this hard court?
But like ultimately that helped like kind of steal him mentally to play some of his better tennis I've ever seen him play there. And then he turned around and he won Miami impressively, beating Sinner. But he will be a factor, but his path is tough. It's tough. And I think he did a good job of really giving himself a break after Australia to really regroup physically. So he should be pretty fresh. And he should be the favorite in that quarter, but I don't think he's bettable at price. I think Nadal is absolutely live for Q2. And honestly, Nadal versus Medvedev as later stages of that quarter would be must watch. It would be so good. The Rune is not a factor right now at all. It's worth noting that, people who are long, the tennis hardos who have been with us for years, Gil.
Yes.
I was very bullish on Rune ultimately getting to the same level where Sinner and Alcaraz are now, and he may get there. We'll see. But he's going through like super manic, weird shit with his coaching team, with his approach to the game, with how many tournaments he's entering, with lack of focus. Like he just does not seem to have a grip on how to become a professional, which is a problem because like that's ultimately what really helped Alcaraz and Sinner get to their stages of their career so quickly as young men. And Rune is just not on the same level at all. He still does have that psycho mentality that you need to be a slam winner, I think. But right now it's like a little, it's like unreined, right? Like it's out of control a little bit, and it's not serving him well. And he's back with his old coach, Patrick Mouratoglou, who has a little bit of a very weird announcement that they reunited appeal of Simona Halep, who was Mouratoglou's last partnership, who got busted for for performance enhancing drugs, got suspended for years. That appeal just got overturned. So Simona Halep is going to be back in our lives relatively shortly here.
Every tennis appeal on doping wins, by the way. Every one of them always does.
I think they actually go wild. They go bananas with the penalties, knowing that they're going to get rolled back. But whatever the case, Simona Halep's coming back. Mouratoglou is no longer with Simona Halep. A lot of pointing the fingers to his camp from her camp and, all that sort of stuff. But he's now with Rune. And so who the heck knows what's going to go on there. But I don't think he's a factor here really at all. And then in Q1, I think the name, you mentioned that there's a couple of players who have kind of surprised to the good so far this year, really taking steps forward. Ugo's kind of at the top of that list. But I think you've seen some pretty important development positively from Casper Ruud.
Yes.
He took a full off season, I think, and did a nice job of kind of getting his mind and head right and his game right. And he's gonna have a fun clay season. I don't think he makes any noise here or upsets Djokovic and wins Q1 or anything like that. But it's important to watch his game and see if you're seeing the same things I'm seeing. Taylor Fritz is maybe the last comment.
Fritz is in Q2.
You need to have two numbers for Taylor Fritz if you're making numbers. You have a Taylor Fritz general number, and you have a Taylor Fritz is playing in California number.
Great call.
Because he's a different player.
Yeah.
He's a different player. I don't know what it is, but like, there's a tongue-in-cheek joke in the Golf Sharp community about like, oh, we got to bet this guy. Gets to sleep in his own. This is his home tournament. He's gets to sleep in his own bed.
Golf cappers love that shit.
Sleep in his own bed.
Yes.
Right? Like they're saying that, and I don't think they actually believe it. I think they're making fun. But for whatever reason, Fritz getting to sleep in his own bed, being in his own backyard, because he's a Southern California kid, he plays his best tennis here, period. Like, his best numbers are at Indian Wells, period. And so if he ultimately, you know, kind of surprises and wins Q2, you shouldn't be shocked. But I think there's too much talent in there at the end of the day. That.
But let me just do the raw data thing. Like, Carlitos, Novak, Jannik Sinner, Nadal, well, we'll throw Nadal out because he hasn't played, but Rublev and Dimitrov. Those are the only players on tour that have better raw data on hards than Fritz. Fritz is 106.5 12 months, 107.3 6 months, 108.4 3 months. Like, his numbers are surprisingly great still on hards.
Yeah.
So, and you're right. He loves this California stuff. He loves this tournament specifically.
Yeah. Again, like, you shouldn't be surprised if he does something awesome, I guess. Yeah. And I don't really have, like, I guess I should eat a little crow here. Like, I thought Fritz did sort of the cardinal mistake or like kind of telegraphed. Like, sometimes it's just like a flat out mistake, and sometimes it's telegraphing when a player plays too many exhibitions in the space between the end of the last season and the start of the new season, because it's like, well, if I can get this money, like, I need to strike while the iron's hot, right? And they're traveling all over the world and they're getting checks and they're, you know, they're playing, but, like, you know, you probably should have just gone home and, you know, just start, you know, trained and recouped and worked on your game, right? And that happened to Root a couple of seasons ago, and he was miserable coming into the next season, and it carried through all the way through the entire year. And I was worried that was going to happen to Fritz because of the way he kind of took his off season a little frivolously, I thought. But he played better in Australia than I was prepared to give him. He exceeded my expectations, I guess I should say. And you're right, on hard court, he's a dynamic player. You shouldn't expect him to do much on clay. He does move very well, but he is tall. He does have a bomb of serve, and when it's timed well, and when he's playing with confidence, he's a very dynamic player.
Is there any of these clay, so the guys who have been playing on the clay tour in South America here in the early part of the season, you know, my brain, when I see them on the draw, a little part of me just kind of does a throw out with them. But if one of these guys does well here, and again, it is the slowest of the hard courts, right? And I'm talking about the Yaris,
Cerundolo,
the Baez. Those guys. Like, who's the guy of that group that you're like, actually, I could see this guy getting pretty far?
Yeah, none of those guys.
I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Some years there's guys, right?
Yeah.
Some years there's absolutely guys that you have circled, and you're like, man, people don't realize how well that guy was actually playing down on the Golden Swing. But this year was just chaos down there.
Yeah, man.
I don't know what happened, but those tournaments were a hot mess.
Diaz, Acosta, those kind of guys.
The guy that's probably still a little underrated by market for 2024 performance so far is probably Demonauer. Like, he's not being rated as a top 8 player in the world, but I think he is right now. I don't know how well he'll do here at Indian Wells. He never really impressed me here in the past. And this could be fluky, he is performing well at the early part of the season when everybody else is still warming up. But he's playing great tennis in 2024 so far. Sinner are the only two guys that beat Djokovic, right?
I believe that's the case, yeah. I keep refreshing stuff just to see if they've... By the way, they didn't have a half bracket market on the men's side as they do with the women's, which you talked about. I'm looking at first round matches. We still don't have a schedule. We're doing this, Drew and I, at 4 p.m., 4.05 p.m. right now, Pacific, the night before, the afternoon before the tournament starts. I don't know if you glanced at any of the men's first round matches. Was there anything that... without having done a deep dive on that, sort of leaps off the page for you? Have you looked at all?
No, I think I'll just stick to sort of the high level macro thoughts here, because I don't have any reads on the head to head on the round one matches. But I think I'll feel silly in hindsight doing this, but I'm gonna bet some Nadal at price just because it's what you said, 35-1.
35
is available out there. Yeah. Like, he's good enough to win, it's a tough draw for him. He got a very tough draw, I thought, but he still does have the mental edge over everybody else in this tour. And I think, the, you know, like I don't have a read on what's going on with Djokovic, right? So this, again, like file this away for just rampant speculation, right? But the way he treated his time between the Australia Open loss, which was, which should have been a little bit of alarm bells, right? Like that loss to Sinner was bad.
Yeah.
Right. He looked, he was, that was like, oh, your career might be coming to an end here, buddy. Like, you know, like if this is the way you're going to play in late stages against elite competition, like you're in trouble. And you know, what has he done in the meantime? Like, has he doubled down and kind of really focused to get his season started off on the right foot here at Indian Wells? No, he's going to Laker games just to, you know, to chum it up with Jokic. He's going to.
And D-Bots.
Yeah. He's skiing in the Alps. He's skiing in the, you know, he's skiing all over the world. Like he looks like a guy who's pretty content with where he is in, you know, in the, kind of pantheon of tennis. My assumption is he's probably just going to take it easy until Wimbledon and then try to take back that Wimbledon title. And at that point, whatever else he gets, the rest of his career is gravy. That's my gut for what's going on with Djokovic. So I don't think you should be shocked if he has a little bit of a, what was that, kind of a moment here in Indian Wells.
He was at UCLA most of this week playing there. Yeah. In addition to attending the Lakers games. I'm just,
he's like goofing off. He's like, you know, he's, and maybe that helps, like maybe playing with a little less focus and a little less intensity, like he's having more fun. Like that could ultimately be beneficial and I could end up eating these words, but I think I'm pretty cold on Djokovic right now, as far as the rating goes, relative to Alcaraz and Sinner. And I think, the real buy low is Nadal, because Alcaraz and Sinner are going to have a potential war, in that semifinal. On the bottom half, and one of those guys is going to limp through and have to take on Nadal in the final, and that'll be fun.
Let me just do the Nadal potential. Let's do the old potential path here.
Sure.
Just to sort of buttress the 35-1 here. So Milos Raonic, for those unfamiliar, serve bodish in most of his career, but he's been
Wimbledon finalist.
Yeah, Wimbledon finalist. Canadian.
What year was that, man? 2016?
Oh, that was a long time ago. That was a pre-Visa. Yeah, he's got, yeah, pre-Visa.
Yeah, Milos, you know what? You know who he is? He's boring Nick Kyrgios.
He's boring. That's right. He's Canadian.
Oh, sorry.
Boring
Canadian.
Nick. Yes, that's
Canadian
right.
Nick Kyrgios. Yeah.
Yes. So he's got Raonic in the first round, and Raonic we thought would be retired 100 times by now. Then a potential second round opponent would be Rune, who you already said you're not high on right here.
Like, yeah.
You mentioned the mental advantage there. Third round opponent would be Lorenzo Musetti. I don't have a problem with that at all.
He's.
And then the fourth round would be Taylor Fritz.
Rematch of our final from 2 years ago.
That's right. Quarters would be Medvedev, as we mentioned.
Yeah. Incredible match, potentially.
Semis.
Rematch of the Australian Open finals from 2 years ago.
That's right. Semis would be Novak, and then the final would either be Carlitos or Sinner. But it's not the worst path early, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. No, it's not. It's not. I think, you know, maybe there's a little cold water in there because people still rate Rune. Musetti is, if he even gets to that stage, I guess we'll give him his flowers, but he's been a mess this year.
Yeah.
I think the Nadal Fritz and then Medvedev and Djokovic potentially, if Djokovic even gets there, because again, somebody could pop him. We'll see. I think all of those are going to be must watch matches. If you're going to bet tennis on clay, you got to watch all of the top half of this draw playoff.
Okay, if people want your picks, where do they go, Drew?
We'll do multiple podcasts on this, I'm sure. If I have anything that's extra super hot, I'll make sure to get it to your guys.
Okay, and we'll do numbers game appearances throughout this tournament. Again, it's a week and week and a half of tennis. All of mine will be at VSiN.com/picks, which I'll do daily. And again, just at a glance, first round, I don't think I'm going to have a lot for it, but again, I don't know how this shakes out beyond what's posted right now. Like I said, Volinets is the only thing that leaps off the page right now. Last question then, unless I've missed anything.
Yes.
And again, we apologize because I wish there were more markets out there, but hopefully a lot of this can give you food for the hypotheticals when these numbers come out. So if three players can win on the women's side, Iga, Rybakina, Sabalenka, in your opinion?
Yeah. My official predictions are Iga 2-1 over Rybakina, Iga 2-0 over Sabalenka on the women's side.
I like it.
And then on the men's side.
How many can win on the men's side? How many players can win this?
About eight. There's about
wow.
Eight.
Wait a minute. Let's yeah. Hold on. Novak, Carlitos.
Tier one is Sinner and Alcaraz and Djokovic. Tier two is Nadal, Medvedev. Taylor Fritz is in there for sure. And then tier three for me of who can win this. I think you have to consider Demonauer and Rude as well. Sasha's very forget about it. He's not getting by Alcaraz, I don't think.
I think the Demonauer call is a very good one. Like, I think he's that guy that if it was going to shock the average fan, that's the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Scam Nori, not on the short list.
But what I like, though, is that you included Rude and Fritz, because I wasn't sure you were going to, but the Taylor Fritz thing needs to be said.
They could win this. I guess my official prediction on the inside is I'm going to go with Nadal over Djokovic in semifinal one.
Wow.
I'm going to go with Sinner over Alcaraz in semifinal two. And I'll take Nadal over Sinner.
Bro, that would be fucking fantastic.
Be cool.
Yes,
it would be so cool.
It'd
be cool.
Drew, I love you, man. And this might be your finest performance because now you said they stopped the ski lift stopped, but still, you got off the slopes for this.
I gotta go get my après ski on, man. Fondue's waiting for me.
Oh, après ski, gotta do it. How long are you there for?
I'll be here all week.
Okay, so you'll be back for the weekend though. If you said Indian Wells, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll be back back because the pro move. Okay, here's you want some more plus EV.
Please. Yeah.
Advantage play move. If you're gonna go to the trouble of like going to a resort for a skiing vacation, you want to ski Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and not Saturday, Sunday. There is no reason to wait in the lines. When you have the weekend warriors out there. That's our go-to. We get in on Monday, we leave on Friday.
And probably your run percentage is cut like below half, right? If you try doing
it. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. If there's lines, forget about it.
Forget it. Not worth it.
Yeah.
Drew Dinsick, everybody, at whale_capper. Again, the podcasts are the Deep Dive Podcast, Dinsick Classic, which he does with Andy Molitor, and then NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with Jay Croucher. Both phenomenal in their own ways. I can't thank you enough, man. This is awesome. We will not only do numbers game appearances, but as far as tennis podcasts are concerned, we'll reconvene for the French. Dan Weston has pledged to join us. He's on the recovery.
Yes.
He's in France. He said he's 80 to 90%. He'll be with us for the French Open. So I look forward to that.
Yeah, that's worth your time. Double dip on French clay because Olympics are going to be there too.
Oh shit!
They're playing the Olympic tennis is on clay this year at Roland Garros. You know that?
Olympic tennis is on clay.
Yeah.
Of course it is because it's in Paris.
Yeah.
Just for everybody else who doesn't know your background, you also are a huge swimming guy, right? Like you handicap swimming. Well, I think we lost Drew right at the end. Did we lose you? We lost. I mean, oh, okay. All right. Well, we were about to leave anyway, but you can reconnect with him. Yeah. So Drew's other big thing besides tennis and the NBA and, you know, the NFL, obviously those are the obvious ones. He's a monster swimming better. So when it comes to the Olympics this year in Paris, not only will we get his thoughts on tennis itself, which is just mentioned is on clay, but we will also talk swimming with Drew, who I don't know if we can reconnect with him or not, but nonetheless, his phone died. We're good. We got enough. Thank you for listening. Good luck with all your Indian Wells bets. Again, all of my plays will be at VSiN.com/picks for subscribers, but if you are listening to a numbers game on VSiN, 10 to noon Eastern, 7 to 9 a.m. Pacific, Monday through Friday, I will give those out on air, too, because none of the matches will have started that early in the morning, so you can tune in that way. You don't have to be a subscriber just between you and me to get the picks for Indian Wells, tennis's de facto fifth major. Thank you for listening. Good luck with all your plays.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.